Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And hello once again, and welcome back to American Tennis. It's another week of American Tennis every Wednesday at noon on the UR Tennis Network. American Tennis comes to you, and thank you, Jason Haynes, and the UR Tennis Network. That's the letter U, the letter R, the number 10, and the letter S, Network. Jason started the network about 5 years ago, and folks, you can get over 1,000 different shows on tennis now. On your podcast, go to your iPhone to urtennisnetwork.com, and golly, you get Lisa Stone's Parenting Aces program. It's in the fourth year now. You can get John Denise's Florida tennis program. Jason Haynes, of course, the College Connection comes to you 2 hours from right now, and I'm Coach Chuck Creasy. This is American Tennis, and I believe Steve Clark still has the West Coast program, but West Coast Tennis. But, folks, there are so many wonderful programs out there, so many great coaches being interviewed, and you can right now just go to a smorgasbord of information with everything that UR Tennis Network has brought to you. So thank you, Jason Haynes. Thanks, UR Tennis Network, and again, I'm Chuck Creasy. This is American Tennis, and folks, we always encourage you to stand up, speak out, and say those things that you want to say and need to say, and this is America. It's the land of freedom. We have freedom of speech. We have freedom of worship. We have, and our freedoms are there, and they are by law. And we want you to be respectful, address issues, not people. And you can pretty much say anything you want to say. But, folks, we do not live in a socialist government yet. It's moving in that direction. But we have freedom here. We have freedom. And Edmund Burke says that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good people, good men to do nothing. And you must fight coercive leadership that forces you, that bullies you into doing different things. We need leadership. Persuasion is okay, but leadership by example is the one that we look for. And that's the way tennis has always grown in the United States, is the war of ideas. And thank goodness for the war of ideas and sporting events like the Fosbury Flop. How about that if we wouldn't have had innovation? How about soccer-style kicking with football? How about, would we still be doing the Rick Barry free throw? You know, actually, the underhanded two-handed set shot, underhanded shot, the bucket shot, was used for years and years and years, but thanks to, golly, the people developed a jump shot and things like that. But, folks, we innovation is part of what we need. And with all that goes on in tennis today, yeah, we look at all of the equipment and things as it's those great learning tools. We should use whatever we can to help our students learn the game. You know, I'll go back to wood rackets a lot in teaching kids how to volley, and it cleans up volleys right away because it gives them such a sweet spot they cannot really, mess up the stroke, molest the stroke. They have to really use solid strokes. We need to have the freedom to do those things. And American Tennis, this is United States of America. We give you the commentary each week on what we believe is good, what we believe is not so good, and those things that we need to be talking about. So if you want to call in, it's area code 714-583-6853, 714-583-6853. And I wanted to get started today and tell you a little bit about why I'm doing a program on pressure today. As much as I would love my three children to just be in love with tennis, by the way, I am teaching them all tennis, whether they know it or not. We go to the courts and they're learning and they're getting their strokes and everything. But none of them have shown an interest in being a tennis player yet. And to some of you, you might think, well, how could that be? Here's a guy that's been in tennis 50 years of his life, and he's not forcing tennis down their children's throat. Well, I've learned enough to know that this is an acquired taste, and you really got to keep people around it enough to fall in love with it. Absolutely is an acquired taste in tennis. But we need to teach people the skills and the basics of how to play tennis. I tell my children, I go, I'm going to teach you how to play tennis, how to play golf, and absolutely I'm going to teach you how to fish too. And those things you need for your mental health as you go through life. But with my children, I'm teaching them how to play tennis, but my daughter is turning out to be a very good swimmer, and she gets up every morning at 5:30 and goes swimming. And my younger daughter is into dance, and we went and saw, we were able to see Broadway programs a couple times now already, and she's in love with dancing, and that's what she's in love with. And so I'm teaching both of them tennis, folks. Actually, I hit with my 12-year-old daughter, and she makes balls, and it's good exercise for me, but she shows no interest in wanting to be a tennis player. My son, who's a very good athlete, a 10-year-old, he has got all the strokes and he's learning everything, but he is in love with baseball. Basketball season just getting over here, but in love with baseball. And I'm now a assistant baseball coach for his rec league team, and it's pretty interesting. The head coach gave me the assignment in the dugout just to make sure that everybody went to bat in order. You know, so I'm pretty low on the totem pole with the baseball coaching. But here's the point. They had a game last night. My son's team had a game last night, and it was very, very close. In the end, it came down to who handled the pressure the best. And it's pretty cool. You know, at most levels, when you hear about 10-year-old baseball, the people are saying, oh, we just want them to have fun. Go out there and have fun. It doesn't matter who wins. Nope. You know what? It always matters who wins. And it always matters for learning who wins. And we look at people as if losing is going to grind them into mincemeat and they'll never again want to play the sport and all those things. But you know what, folks? I'm so against just say, oh, let's just have fun, where it becomes an after-school activity and not a sport. I want my children in sports, not just after-school activities. You hear me, high school coaches out there? Are you listening to me? Tennis, tennis instructors, this is not an after-school activity. This is a great sport. It's the greatest of all sports because it really teaches a young person everything that they would want to know about themselves, and they learn about themselves and they learn what's inside of them. So yesterday it came down basically to who handled the pressure, and there was a young pitcher went on the mound and he was able to deliver at the end of the ball game, and the catcher who had struck out the time before and was just devastated that he'd struck out in the last guy at the bat, but he made a great catch at the end of the game with a foul ball to get the last out to win 3-2, and there was pressure and the other team was disappointed, but went well, and my son's team was happy and they handled the pressure. And at the end of it, you know, people say, wow, there was pressure on what, you know, it wasn't good, wasn't healthy. No, you know what? It is absolutely part of sports when you want to win. If you don't care who winning, it's not a sport. It's an after-school activity. It is not a sport. But in sports, yeah, it matters who wins from the standpoint that trying to win is everything. It's not winning is everything. Giving everything you have to win is everything. That's the only time the kids learn, with a commitment to give everything they have in trying to win. So I wanted to spend a little bit of time today and talk about, is pressure really a privilege? You know, pressure is tough, maybe. I always used to say pressure makes diamonds. You know, time and pressure, it makes diamonds. And it either makes you or crushes you. But the point is, with it, we're always so afraid of being crushed that we never see the upside of what pressure really does and the growth that happens. And I can come up with 50 different sayings, and I'll give you some of them in the program today. But basically, our program today is pressure a privilege? And we'll be right back with American Tennis's Coach Chuck Creasy.
This is Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena, from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at chuckcreasy.net. That's chuckcreasy.net.
Folks, this is Coach Chuck Creasy, and go to chuckcreasy.net for much more than just advertisements about my camps. I've also got my 5 books that I've written up there if you'd like to order one of my books.
To learn
also
more about
I've
Chuck Creasy and his total
article.
Tennis training camps, go to chuckcreasy.net.
And I also have information about my summer camps. I have information about my books. I have information about my writings. But, folks, ChuckCreasy.net is where I hope you will go to learn much more than just about how to hit a tennis ball. Please check out ChuckCreasy.net. Is Coach Chuck Creasy, American Tennis, and we are making them in America. And we're talking about pressure in our sport, and it's pressure of privilege. And folks, if you dare and if you care, pressure will always be there, especially in tennis. Now, let me talk about the physical, the mental, the emotional very quickly here. And this is always the foundation of the books I've written and talks I give. But you can't do what you can't do. You can't put in what the good Lord left out, but you can't do what you can't do. Everyone has a top level. Everyone has a bottom level of their physical abilities. And let's say on a scale of 1 to 10, someone's best day is an 8. Their worst day is a 4. Another player's best day is a 7. Their worst day is a 5. So these are the kind of matchups that you get often. If my best day is a 9 and worst day is a 7, your best day is a 6, worst day is a 3, there's no way if you're two levels better than somebody, you're usually going to lose to someone physically. There's no way to beat a person if they're two levels better than you. But most of the competitions that happen with our youngsters, whether it's college tennis, junior tennis, high school tennis, all has to do with people within one level of their opponent. And here's the deal, though. Here's what makes it interesting. If my level, my top level is an 8 and my worst level is a 4 and your top level is a 6 and your worst level is a 3, if you play in your top level, which is a 6, and I play sort of sloppy and my say I play level 5, we got a ball game, and then we have pressure. Now, as the pressure fluctuates up and down, and things go up and down in every tennis match, when the pressure fluctuates, we've got a ball game. But the bottom line on the thing is my top game is better than your top game. If we're both playing our top games, I'm going to win. And if my bottom level is better than your bottom level and we're both playing our bottom levels, I'm going to win. But what happens because of pressure, this is a game of action-reaction. This is a game of fluctuating skill sets, and it's a game of choking, and it's a game where your hands basically go away. Now, let me explain that. A lot of people don't understand that, but your fine motor skills are what breaks down when you lose in tennis. It is not your big muscle skills or your big motor skills. Every coach knows that you train the big muscles over and over and over and over again. In my case, I train the lower body over and over and over again. Movement to the ball, recovery steps, the loading, the unloading with the legs. I train the lower body so many times that players get to the ball and they're able to get leverage on their shots with the fundamentals that they have. Also, their stroke production in the early stages, yes, you do train the stroke production, but I like to think of the upper body as kinesthetic and feel, and basically it is more of something that has to do with your how you feel the ball. And the mechanics have to be there. Don't get me wrong. The stroke technique has to be there and everything. But the lower body is more repetitive and left brain. The upper body is more right brain, or should I say it's more kinesthetic. Now, here's the deal. What happens under pressure is that if I'm that player, that my top level is an 8 or a 9, under pressure, I'm not going to play an 8 or a 9. Usually I'll play a 6 or a 7. Well, if the other person is the underdog, they come out and they play well for a while, they're going to play at a 6 or a 7 also. So therefore, you have parity in the tennis until it's time to close out the match. When you close out the match, here's the deal. Tennis has been rated as the hardest sport possible to close out matches, harder than kicking a field goal at the end of the football game, harder than striking out the last batter as a relief pitcher, harder than making free throws at the end of the game. And why this is that you have to win a whole game usually using your lower end level. If you're tight, if you're not confident winning, you have to win with your lower end against the other person's top end. Now, this is considering and pointing out that both players The lower player has not cracked and they have not gone away. If the lower player goes away mentally, it's easy to close out matches. And the other part of it is once the favorite is comfortable winning, that's why if you've beaten somebody the last time, it's so much easier to close out a match the next time because you're just used to doing it and there's not a tendency to get tight and to choke as much. And nobody likes to talk about choking, but every one of you out there listening to this should go to the Jim Lehrer. It's the 15-second cure, 16-second cure, and he has a target. He's a sports psychologist, but he has a target where the bullseye, the challenge zone, is where you want to be. But on the next ring from the challenge zone, closest to the middle, is the choke zone. Right before you go to challenge zone, you're in the choke zone. On the outside of the choke zone, you have the anger zone. On the outside of the anger zone, it's a bullseye target now. On the very outer ring, it's the tanking, where you've just given up. So tanking is the worst. Anger is a little bit better than tanking, but it actually is a form of tanking. When you lose your stuff, it's almost like you're tanking. It's just sophisticated tanking, you know, in a way. I got angry, so I lost. Better than anger, though, is the choke zone. You have to go to the choke zone always before you go to the challenge zone. Most of the time, the better player, if they're comfortable winning, they will go to the challenge zone more easily than the player who is the underdog. In tennis, it is unbelievably important to be the favorite. Favorites win in tennis. Underdogs play well for a while, but they lose at the end. And we go through all these mental exercises for players to try to become the favorites in their mind. One of the best things I do is I try to teach the players, be very aware to see your good and see the opponent's bad things when you're coming down the stretch. Do not see their good and your bad. If you're the underdog, there's a tendency to say, you know, or see that my forehand's not working, I'm not making my first serves, and you become paralysis by over analysis of yourself. And it really is a bad thing to see your mistakes coming down the stretch, trying to close a match out. And it's a bad thing to see the winner that your opponent rips, and you see that wow, they're catching fire here, and boy, that one really hurt me. And that feel, I always say winners feel like two, only count one. Unforced errors feel like one, feel like one, but really count two, you know, coming down the stretch. But I wanted to give you sort of that commentary to help you understand that, yeah, there is a premium to being a favorite in tennis because in the end, you're more comfortable closing the match out than the underdog in the match. And again, it's just part of the deal. Some programs ago, I talked about the pressure curve. Now, this is important because I even will use this with the Little League kids that I get to work with now and then. The pressure curve, it's a thing called a Yates inverted U hypothesis. And psychology 101, most phys ed books, most sporting books, they all have this Yates inverted U hypothesis. And there's an XY axis. And basically all it shows is that as pressure increases, performance increases until pressure is too much, and then the performance goes down. In other words, if you have too little pressure, you play bad. If you have too much pressure, you play bad. In other words, on a scale of 1 to 10, 7 maybe is optimal pressure for you to play well. You've got enough pressure to play well, not too much where it will make you cracked, not too little where it will make you sloppy. If you were at a 3 in pressure, you'll play bad. In other words, I beat the player 6-1, 6-1 the last time we played. 3-3 in the first set, I'm really upset this time because I haven't opened the match up already. Well, when you beat somebody 1-1 the last time, there's maybe not enough pressure to make you play well, to allow your hand-eye coordination to work. The Yates inverted U hypothesis has to do with fine motor skills, once again. It has to do with your hands working, your finesse working, your touch working. Again, the big muscle skills are overlearned to the point of competence under pressure, automatic competence under pressure. Your hand-eye coordination fluctuates from day to day to day. That's why players, a lot of times they'll come off of a match after winning and they'll say, oh, I played so terrible. I missed this ball, that ball, this ball, that ball. But in the end, I was able to win. Oh, I played so terrible. Very often an underdog will come off the court and they'll say, wow, I played great for a while and I had my chances, but I did not come through. Well, the pressure has to be right. In other words, this is something you work with, this pressure curve with players, and I'm going to give you a few analogies here to think about and a few descriptions that are really good visuals. And I credit the first one to Kyle Bailey, who is fellow coach and a person I worked with side by side for 3 years. And Kyle's now a college coach and Monmouth State, I believe, is where he's at. But he said he always teaches his players to think of two balloons, one on one side of the net, one on the other side of the net. And with those two balloons, what you have is an understanding that your job is to blow up the other one's balloon with pressure that is put on their side of the court. Now, that means physical pressure with your game, mental pressure with your decisions, or emotional pressure with your poise, your stick-to-itiveness, your competitiveness. All of those fill the person's balloon up to the where it gets too much pressure. Instead, if 7 is the right equilibrium, it puts an 8 or a 9 on them, and then they start performing poorly. But you have to do it in a fair way, of course. But you do it with your game, your decisions, and your mental attitude, your body language, and your competitiveness. Now, your job is to keep an equilibrium of pressure on your side. If your balloon is flat and out of air, you're not going to play well. You can't play well. It's just not going to work. Your hands are not going to work. If there's no pressure, you're not going to play well. If there's too much pressure, you're not going to play well. So in your balloon, you've got to fight to keep that 7. If people say the zone, I was in the zone. Well, I like to say that you were at the right pressure gradient the whole match when you play in that zone. You keep pressure on. Now, so I've always thought that was a great visual that Kyle used about keeping the right amount of pressure on their balloon and trying to fill up the other person's balloon. I have often seen where a person will go into a match and rope-a-dope and allow their opponent to have a balloon that's not inflated at all, and they play very poorly, and they don't think they have to play well, and they play sloppy. But the long and the short of it, you want your opponent to have fluctuations of pressure where their hand-eye coordination does not work, and you want your pressure to be about right so that your hand-eye coordination doesn't work. So this, I thought that was a great analogy. Second analogy I'm going to use, I'm trying to get the Yates inverted U hypothesis. And let's go back to where when I was a child. I don't know how many of you out there remember your mother cooking on the stove with a pressure cooker. Do any of you have that recollection? Well, I know that my mom, we had 6 kids, and we didn't always have the choicest of meat. And I don't know where she bought the meat and how expensive it was. But I do know that she always had to tenderize it when she came home. She used to put the meat in the pressure cooker. I know people that hunt a lot, deer meat and different things, they'll put in a pressure cooker. Well, this was an iron pot, folks, that basically mom used to clamp it down. You had a clamp, and you clamped the thing down where literally you could not move that lid. Now, all that it had at the top was a little valve. And that valve would let steam come out when she started cooking, and it would go ching ching ching. It would start shooting steam out the top. She would put this iron bulb or this steel bulb on top that just sort of held the pressure at a certain level. So Of course, if you clamped down the thing completely and didn't let any pressure out, there would be so much pressure build up in there, it'd probably cause an explosion. The other thing is, if you let too much pressure out, of course, the meat would never cook. Have you ever boiled meat? It just becomes hard. And so basically the trick was to have the right amount of pressure, let's say X amount of pressure in that pot. So I've often, one time I went down and trying to explain the right pressure situation, I went down to the hardware store, to the Ace Hardware, and I bought a pressure cooker, and I brought it back, and I showed it to my team, who had never seen one before, by the way. So anyhow, I explained to them, I said, okay, guys, here's the deal. This is how you clamp it down. Here's how this works, and here's this pressure release valve. Now, I want to give you a couple thoughts. The fire underneath it represents the situation that you are in or the player that you are playing and how hard that match is, how hard the challenge is. Now, sometimes there's not much fire and it's not going to cause much of a stir inside, and it's sort of easy to keep X amount of pressure in here. Sometimes that fire is going to be raging. Boy, oh boy, that player is good that you're playing. And boy, oh boy, it's a big match. It's a semifinals, and you're trying to get into the finals of this tournament. Boy, oh boy, it's a conference championship. But the bottom line, you've got to keep the right amount of pressure. Now, you see this pressure release valve, and you see how this thing is made of iron. Now, I wanted to give you a couple other analogies, fellas. I would say, look, this pressure release valve is the only thing you have any control over. You don't have control over the situation. You do not have control over your opponent. You do not have control over these variables that put pressure on you. But you do have control over this pressure release valve, this iron bulb, or those things like your routines between points. Get your jump rope out and skip rope when your hands are getting tight and you're choking. Reverse the score in your head when it gets down to those big games. In other words, when it's 30-15 you say to yourself, 30-15 them, 30-15 them. And believe it or not, folks, this works really, really well when you reverse the score, because you're going to play better when you're behind than when you are ahead. And it absolutely works. There are all these different vehicles to try to get this pressure release valve to do the job of letting the right amount of pressure out, not all the pressure, but the right amount of pressure out, so that you find your equilibrium there. One last variable, guys. I want you to see how thick the pot is, this lining of this wall of this pot. This one's pretty thick, right? Yeah, it is. Okay, now I want you to think of this thickness versus maybe a tin or maybe tin foil. The thickness of the walls of this pot represent the reps you've done in practice and how strong your game is. And if you've done the repetitions to have the muscle memory locked in place to where no matter what the pressure is, it's not going to bust a hole in your game. So this guy is pretty good, right? This guy represented by this pot, his game is solid. Now look at it, if it was just a tin pot and it had a little bit of dent in it, pressure got more and more and more, and it springs loose. Boom, you lose all the pressure, and therefore you're not able to perform simple hand-eye coordination tasks of serving, returns, volleys, putting, accelerating. Oh, what? Every shot in tennis has to do with hand-eye coordination, doesn't it? If the pressure is not there, you'll play poorly. If there's too much pressure there, you'll play poorly. If you don't have your pressure release valve working right, you'll play poorly. Or if your game is not strong enough, you can't rely on that pot holding up to great pressure, you'll play poorly. So these are a couple of the different variables that I'll use with the guys. So now, this next one I'm going to give you here, and I'm getting a call here, but just hang on a bit. I'll try to get you on here if I can. Again, if you want to call in, it's area code 714-583-6853. We've only got about 9 minutes left in the program today, but I might not be able to answer your call. I want to get through this information. Here's another simple way of getting your players to learn how to handle pressure or get the right that pressure curve right. The Yates inverted U hypothesis, or X amount of pressure where you play at your best. So I had a player one time didn't understand this, and I said, look, it's really, this is the way I want you to look at this. I want you to look at the pressure of the situation, then the pressure you put on yourself. These two things change all the time. You might have a pressure a match that is a lot of pressure, sometimes pressure match that is medial pressure, some that has very little pressure according to your outlook. But here's what I want you to remember. Pressure of the situation plus the pressure that you put on yourself should equal 4. So if the pressure is, a 3, there's tremendous amount of pressure. How much pressure should you put on yourself? Well, it's a 1. It's a 1. That equals 4. Now think of how we make a mistake if we've got a big, big match coming up and we over-prepare. Too much paralysis by analysis and we freeze up. We're over-prepared. Actually, the day before a big match, I can tell whether my team is ready to go. If they over-practice and over-sharpen the knife, I know that they're going to play poorly the next day. If they under-practice, it's not good. If it's over, they over-practice, it's not good. But if you have a really hard match, it's better to under-practice the day before than to over-practice. And I'll explain more about that here in a second. Now, to the contrary, the opposite, I would say, if the match is really easy, it's a 1. Pressure of the situation is a 1. Plus pressure I put on myself. I should put a 3 on myself. 1 plus 3 equal 4. Here's the mistake we make. If we have an easy match, we prescribe as an easy match. A lot of times we don't put pressure on ourselves to perform. We play sloppy, then it gets down to a crisis management situation. You don't have to make an easy match a crisis situation. All you have to do, if you are favored to win, you prepare and you outwork your opponent, you will never take a bad loss. You prepare, you do all the details, you do your walkthroughs, you never, ever underprepare for an easy match. If you do that, that's when you see the upsets happen. And this is something that people, again, go on their feelings. Because the first scenario, you have a really tough and a very hard match. The tendency, I got to get tough. I got to prepare. I got to make sure this is right. I got to make sure I got enough serves. And I got to make sure I've got this done, this done, this done. And then the paralysis by analysis sets in. And if it's a 3 and you prepare with a 3, that's a 6. Now, what have we done? We need 4 as a pressure. Well, the point is we just, our own balloon with too much pressure, and we play poorly. Our hand-eye coordination doesn't work. Again, if the pressure is a 1, we put a 3 on ourselves. Think about the tendency, though, of our feelings. The tendency with our feelings would be the pressure is a 1. I beat this player last time 6-1, 6-1, so no big deal today. I'll be all right. And I go out onto the court, and when it's 3-3 in the first set, instead of being locked in, we're usually mad. And then we try to get the pressure right, and it goes back and forth like a pendulum effect of pressing, not pressing, pressing, not pressing. But it all happens before we play the match. Now, the easiest matches are the matches where they are twos, the two. This is like a crosstown rival or a player that we share wins and losses with equally. And we're pretty even. It's an even matchup, and it's a 2. We usually get ready with the 2. The mistake was made when we overestimate or underestimate an opponent, and then our preparation does not come through. Now, I have a saying. I tell the players, when your rear end starts to quiver, you still have to deliver. The point is they learn how to manage the pressure ultimately. When they do get too much pressure on them, they start choking. Again, a couple of things. I will have them pull out a jump rope, do some jump ropes. I'll have them do a few push-ups. I'll have them. I've even told them a joke now and then. between points. But the whole thing is to get that pressure curve in balance. So what do you do when a player is choking a lot and they keep choking and keep choking? Now, I've had this scenario several times, and almost always it's from a young player who wins a lot because there's not that much pressure coming up the ladder. And they'll come in as a freshman and they'll win. Then there's no heavier burden than a great opportunity. And the pressure mounts and the players lose the magic, so to speak. And I once had a player, my number three player, this is a good story. Freshman, very talented, my number three player, who worked all the way up to number three on the team, went on an 11-match losing streak, and all of the matches were three setters. Usually he would win a set and then choke the second set, and then all his hand-eye coordination would go away in the third. I was beside myself what to do. With about 3 weeks before our conference tournament, I told him, I said, look, you're our number three player. I'm going to keep you at number three, but you won't play number three on the team. You won't play a match on the team again until, and I gave him and put this chart up on my door. I want you to win 50 sets. Now, I don't care who you play. You can play the manager, the intramural director. You can play your grandma. I don't care who you play, but I want that set written up here, and then I want the score right after it. Well, he went to work, and he was playing 6 and 7 sets a day. It took him about 8 days to play 50 sets of tennis because he wanted his spot back. He didn't understand. I said, you just have to trust me on this one. But the bottom line on it, he completed his 50 sets, and he literally beat the manager on the team probably 10 of those sets, intramural champion several times. But he got used to converting games, and our scoring system is so brilliant. This is why we should not go to no ad, folks. You have to learn how to win 3 in a row. You have to be able to convert games and win by 2 at the game and carry leads. But he got so used to converting games that he came back and he rolled out the rest of the year. He won 7 out of his last 8 matches, was a runner-up in the conference, and really finished strong, but it brought him out of the funk. So there's no substitute. There is no bad win in tennis. If your player goes through a slump, they got to win. The rehearsals of doing the right things. Now, with this, I told him you can't be sloppy. You have to do your rituals between points. You have to take your time. You got to do your routines. Try to make first serves when you're ahead. Do all of the body language you need to. Compliment the other person's good shot. Say good shot. When you make a bad shot, go back and touch the fence. You have to do rituals between points. That's very important. It's not just getting the wins, but it's the rehearsals of doing the right thing when he didn't have the prospect of losing, really. He wasn't going to lose these matches. But repetition is the mother of skill, and he eventually broke out. Now, the thing about our game is it is absolutely the most brilliant game ever devised. Our game is a game of simultaneous good or bad. Therefore, it is always a game of double jeopardy. It's the point I should have had and the point you have now. It is always a double whammy when you win the point or double whammy when you lose the point. In other words, the 30-15 point could be 30-all or 40-15. It's always a two-point swing. That's why this no ad is so terrible. Because if on the game point that's the 40-40 point, it's actually worth 8 points. It's an 8-point swing. Two-game swing. And there is a reason our forefathers 141 years ago came up with this beautiful scoring where you have to win 3 in a row, where you have to learn how to carry the leads, where you have to close a match out, and the drama and the pressure building is more important than and so much better than that fast run and gun stuff that they're trying to promote as no ad scoring. And folks, with this, you know, pressure is absolutely a privilege. Our youngsters have to learn about it. And I would encourage you, if you work with young people, you've got to find a balance. Yeah, they need to have a good time. Yes, they need to yes, they don't always understand about the pressure. Yes, they will be sad when they lose. Yes, they'll be happy when they win. But I'm saying there is a difference between a sport and an after-school activity. Do not pass our great sport of tennis off as an after-school activity. Pass it off as a great and noble and the best competitive sport that was ever designed. The depth of it is miles deep once that you jump into it. Do not treat it as something shallow, and do not treat it as something as frivolous as an after-school activity. It is not like playing in the band. It is absolutely playing the violin in the symphony orchestra. There's so much more depth to it than we give it credit for. Pressure is a privilege. Yes, it's a privilege because the favorite has the pressure. But you must learn how to walk with the dignity of the favorite. You must learn how to use the pressure to your advantage. That's what makes this game so beautiful. And I surely have enjoyed this week, folks. And we'll be back next week with another program of American Tennis. I'm Coach Chuck Creasy.
Made in America. Born in a hot land. Raised up a family. Never buy a tattooed on his lip song. Spend a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't prejudiced. He's just made in America.
Reminding you that you are in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. Folks, we'll see you next week.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.